Good morning. It's Parshas Vayigash. We're learning the Sicha Aleph on Parshas Vayigash and Chelek Yud and Likutei Sichas. And thank you, Tzipa, for putting the link to the Sicha in the chat. So anybody who doesn't have the Sefer can easily grab the link from the chat. So we're going. This is, by the way, an iconic Sicha. The Rebbe cried during the Sicha. And we'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later. But just to contextualize what's going on here. So if you happen to have a Chumash, if you go to Perek Mem He in Chumash Bereishis, that's 45, chapter 45. So the Torah tells us that at this point in the back and forth with his brothers, Yosef is no longer able to contain his emotions. V'layochol Yosef l'sapik, he could not contain his emotions in the presence of his brothers, and he asked everybody else to leave. Nobody remained with Yosef except for his brothers. So this is chapter 45, verse 2. And at that point, he wept out loud, and the Egyptians could hear the weeping. And Yosef said, "Ani Yosef ha'ed avichai. I am Yosef, your brother. Is my father still alive?" And his brothers could not reply to him. They were so shocked. And Yosef bid them to come closer to him. And they came closer. And he assuaged their worry that he would take revenge over them. And he told them not to worry. This is in Pasuk Hey, verse 5 in chapter 45, Mem Hey, and he says, "Don't be angry with yourselves. This is all from Hashem. Hashem sent me here to ensure your survival, and it was not you that sent me here." These are very, very famous words. This is in Pasuk Ches, Perek Mem Hey. "It was not you, but Hashem sent me here. And hurry up and go to my father and tell him that this is what your son Yosef said." And it's after this outpouring of emotion and Yosef saying these very, very important words to his brothers and changing the whole playing field, because of course they had a lot of reason to be anxious that he would take revenge for what they had done to him. And he told them, "No, that's not how it was, and it's not how it's going to be," and so on and so forth. And he told them to please go to their father and give them the following message. And at this point, and now in Pasuk Yud Dalet, verse 14, again in chapter 45, Mem Hei, this is the Pasuk and the Rashi, or the Pasuk that we're going to be looking at in the Sicha. And the Pasuk reads as follows, "Vayipal al tzavarei Binyamin achiv." And Yosef fell upon his brother Binyamin's neck, "Vayevch," and he wept. "Ubinyamin bacha al tzavarav," and Binyamin wept upon Yosef's neck. And if you take a look at Rashi, he fell upon his brother Binyamin and wept. "Vayipal al tzavarei Binyamin achi bayevch," and Rashi says, "al shnei mikdashes." He wept for the two batei mikdash, for the two temples, "shasidin liyos b'chalka shebinyamin," which were destined to be built in the territory of Binyamin, "v'seifan lecharev," but in the end they would be destroyed. And so Yosef cried about the two temples that would be in Binyamin's territory. "Ubinyamin bacha al tzabarav," and Binyamin wept upon Yosef's neck, "al mishkan shiloi she'asid liyos b'chalka sheYosef," for the tabernacle, for the mishkan of Shiloi that was going to be in Yosef's territory, "v'seifan lecharev," and in the end that would be destroyed. So now we're going to go into the Sicha. Ala pasuk vayipal al tzavari Binyamin achi vayef ubinyamin bacha al tzavarav. On this pasuk that we just did, that Yosef fell upon the neck of his brother Binyamin, and he cried, and Binyamin cried upon his neck. Isa b'gemara, the Gemara Megillah tells us, bacha Yosef al shnei mikdashin. Yosef cried for the two temples, for the two batei mikdash. Behem hamurumazim b'tevas tzavarei lashon rabim. And they are alluded to in the fact that the word for neck here is plural, tzavarei. Sha'asidin liyos b'chalka shel Binyamin, that were destined to be built in the territorial acquisition of Binyamin, va'asidin l'chariv, and they would be destroyed. Or Binyamin b'cha al mishkan shila sha'asid liyos b'chalka shel Yosef va'asid l'chariv. And Binyamin in turn cried on the neck, and that is singular, of Yosef, and he cried for the Mishkan that would be built in the territory of Yosef in Shiloh, but would also be destroyed. Okay, so the Rebbe continues. V'hinei hatam shetzavarei merames leveis hamikdash. So how do we make the leap that the word neck in the Torah is an allusion to a beis hamikdash or a Mishkan? So it's mivor b'midrash al apostle k'migdal David tzavarecha. This is explained in a midrash on the words from Shir HaShirim that read, "Your neck is like the Tower of David." And we know that David HaMelech, he built the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, even though it was built practically through the agency of his son Shlomo, but it's, you know, David HaMelech, it's attributed to David HaMelech. So it's an allusion to Beis HaMikdash. And the midrash says, concerning the words "Kemigdal David Savarecha," that your neck is like the Tower of David, "Mat Sabor Ze Nosun Begovhei Shel Adam," just as the neck is in the higher portion of a person, "Kach Beis Hamikdash Nosun Begovhei Shel Olam," in like fashion, the Beis Hamikdash is built, was placed in the higher portions of the world. Amnam, however, Mashakos of Begovhei Shel Olam. If you pay attention, the Midrash says, in the heights, in the higher portion of the world. Ein Perushai, this is not meant to be understood, Shehu Oyla Begovai Al Kol Ha'Olam, that the Beis HaMikdash was built in the highest point of the world. Ela Kedepersh B'Gemara. Rather, the way it's explained in the Gemara, the Pasuk of Vein Ksefav Shachin, in Devarim it says, and between his shoulders it rests. Shebeis HaMikdash, the Gemara explains as pasuk that the Beis HaMikdash rests namuch esim v'sholosh ama me'ein itam. That the Beis HaMikdash was actually situated, was built 23 amas lower than the springs of Itam. And these are springs that were located adjacent to Yerushalayim. And from there flowed water into the Har Habayis. And the Beis HaMikdash was situated 23 amas lower than that place. Kitzavare shel Adam, just like the neck of a person. Shehu begavhei shel haguf, it is situated in the higher part of the body. Ela shehu namuch ma'at meharosh, but it is a little bit lower than the highest point, which is the head. Va'adrabe. On the contrary, we see actually that Imre, that David and Shlomo said, they said, Nachse Be Pursa, we're going to build the Beis HaMikdash a little bit lower. Mishum Dichsiv Ubein Ksefav Shachin, because of what it says in the Torah, that between his shoulders it will rest. They understood this to be an allusion to the fact that the Beis HaMikdash should be built a little bit lower than the highest point of the world. Because it says, Ein lecha na'a b'shar yosef m'ksefav. There is nothing nicer or nothing more beautiful in an ox than his shoulders. Haynu, d'begavhoi muvanoi b'seich gavhoi shel olam. So when it says that the Beis HaMikdash was built begavhoi shel olam, in the heights of the world, it means within the highest point, but not at the highest point. The name of the spring was, Itam. The name of the spring is called Itam. And the springs were at an altitude that was 23 amas higher than the Beis HaMikdash. So the Beis HaMikdash was built in the heights of the world, in the higher points of the world, but not at the height. So the Rebbe says, it would seem, Mahu hayisrin v'hayefi, what is the greatness, what is the beauty that the Beis HaMikdash was not built at the apex, at the highest point of the world? What would be the why would we think to do that? In other words, what would we gain through this? Rebbe says, either way, if we're to learn from this, from the fact that Beis Hamikdash was not built at the highest point, that there is nothing to be gained by height, then what are we being taught? What are we to understand from the words that the Beis Hamikdash was built in the higher parts of the world, if there's no benefit to height? And if in fact there is something to be said for height that is considered a benefit and a greatness, in accordance with what it seems we're being taught from the Medrash and from the Gemara, then it would seem that the higher it is, the more beautiful and the more exalted it would be. So what are we to gain? What are we to take away? What is the reason that the Beis Hamikdash was built in the heights of the world, but not at the highest point, Dafka, but 23 amas lower than the highest point? The Yuvan Zem will understand this, Rebbe says, Behakdim Inyan Hatzavar, by prefacing in understanding a little bit more about the idea of the throat. Shehu Mimutza Ben Harosh LaHaguf. It is the middle ground. It is the conduit between the head and the rest of the body. Dihine, klolus hachayus hu b'moyach shebereish. Because generally speaking, the vivifying force for the body is found in the head. V'ham shechasa mehareish al haguf, hi al yedei emtzos hakona vesht vivridin shebekarim. And the way in which this vivifying force is drawn down from the head to the rest of the body is through the agency of the trachea, the esophagus, and the arteries that are in the throat. And in like fashion, this is the way intelligence or intellect is drawn down from the mind that is in the head, from the brain that is in the head. That is that the seichel, the kind of the outer expression of our intellect, nimshach uba, it is drawn down, min hamayach el halev, is drawn down from the mind to the heart, umisham mispashit hashba'asei b'chol haguf, and from there its influence spreads out to the rest of the body, this happens through it passing through the narrowness, the constriction of the throat, hamafsik beinehem, that separates the mind from the heart and the rest of the body, from the head and the rest of the body. Olufiza, harayesh bitzavor yisrin maila gam al harish. And once we understand this, we understand that there is a greatness found in the throat, in the neck, that is even superlative over the head. Dafka hatsavar hagarin. It is specifically the neck, the throat. Mevi lepoyel es tachlisei shel haresh. It is specifically through the agency of the neck and the throat that what has to happen through the head, through the mind. In other words, the tachlis, the goal of what is happening in the command center of our body, effectively in our brain, comes to fruition. It comes to fruition to the fact that it is funneled through the agency of this constricted place called the throat or the neck. And you know, it's very often the case that there's a lot of traffic in this constricted place, in this tunnel, and a lot of things get stuck between the head and the heart. But that's a different discussion. But the Rebbe is saying that just like the Beis Hamikdash was not in the highest point, but it was in the higher part of the world, but a little bit lower than the head, as it were. This is reflected in the way our bodies are built, that the head is the highest point of the body, but it's dafke through a part of the body that is slightly lower than the head, specifically the neck, the throat, that what has to happen through the head of the body actually comes to fulfillment. What happens through the throat? Aleph. Shekol ha'ivorim yikablu chayusa meharesh. It is through the agency of the neck, of the throat, that all of the other limbs are able to get their life force from the brain, from the head. And bei shekulam yisnagu al pi ha'sechel shebereish. And that all of the aspects of the body should comport themselves in accordance with the energy and the messages that are coming from the head. And although obviously there is a greatness about the head, about the brain, that supersedes the greatness of the throat, of the neck, that's simple and plain for everybody to understand. And that is actually revealed and reflected in the fact that the head is higher than the neck. Bigashmi is physically speaking, when you look at the physique of a human being. And even though that's true, hinei ilui zeh shel haresh hu rak b'seida hamadregas. But this is only true in terms of category, in terms of position. Avol b'negei l'tachlisai v'tafkidai shel haresh. But when you are looking at the goal and the reason for being, the purpose of the head, then you understand yesh yisroin mala bitzavar the dafka mepnei shehu namuch b'madregasai. Then you understand that there is something exalted about the neck, about the throat, and it is specifically because it is lower down in category and where it's positioned physically. Shehu hamimutza, because it is the conduit. Because it's specifically the throat, specifically the neck, has the power and the ability to bring the vivifying force from the brain, from the seichel that is in the head, to the rest of the body. And now we can understand the analogy, the analog of the Beis HaMikdash as being alluded to in the notion of tzavar, neck. She'ikar ma'alosei benachsei bei porsa, that the main benefit in that it was a little bit lower, that it was positioned just a little bit lower, meirosh gavoy, from the highest point of the world. Why was this so? Dehine inyanei shel beis hamikdashu, because the whole inyan, the whole concept, the whole point of the beis hamikdash, sheboy, that in the beis hamikdash, v'al yaday, and through it, yumshach v'yair ar eloki l'chol ha'elam, that a godly light, that a celestial light should be drawn to the rest of the world. Ad l'chelkei hachi namuch b'tachtoin b'madrega. And this godly light should flow even to the lowest aspects of this world. V'lachin, and therefore, lo haya hamikdash gavoyha l'gamrei min ha'ilam. Therefore, it wasn't the highest point of the world. Look in the parentheses. It was in the higher points, in the higher elevations, but not the highest. It wasn't higher, and it wasn't exalted over the world. Because if it was positioned in the highest point, and here, of course, we're speaking both physically and spiritually, as it were, then it would be unable to illuminate the rest of the world. Elon Ches Porta. It had to be positioned a little bit lower. Hainu b'shaychus v'kiruv l'olam. it had to be adjacent to, it had to interface with, it had to be close enough to the world, b'chdei la'iro, in order to illuminate it. U'kitzav ha'adam sh'al yidei zeh shehu namuch min ha'isrei mushal ha'reish, ki im b'kiro v'el guf, just like the neck that is positioned lower than the head, which is kind of higher and hovering over the rest of the body. But the neck is positioned bekirav el aguf, closer to the rest of the body, harehu bechinas hamemutza, and thereby it is the connective agent umchabram lachadim, and is able to unite the head with the rest of the body. V'chein hu gam beveis hamigdash haprati shebechol echad mibnei Yisrael. And in like fashion, with the Beis HaMikdash, the personal Beis HaMikdash that is positioned within each one of us. Like we know famously, V'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'saicham, make me a mishkan, I will rest amongst you. Rashi says, b'chol echad be'echad. No, not, I'm sorry, not Rashi. I can't remember the first source where it says that v'saicham means Hashem wants to rest among each one of you. So each one of us has a Beis HaMikdash within us. And the nefesh eloki that is found within us is not elevated and is not separated from our small world, from our microcosm. No, it is busy with, it's invested with, and it's enclosed within our small world, within our body. And why does the nefesh eloki come down? Why does the neshama come down into this world in the first place? B'chdei levarer ulezachech es hanefesh ha'bahamish shebay, in order to purify and refine the nefesh ha'bahamish that is within us, and to refine es gufay, our body, v'eschelkei ba'olam, and everything that is part of our chilek in this world. And when the nefesh eloki does this, al yidei zeh na'ase kulei mishkan u'mikdash la'ir yisbarach, then our entire body becomes a resting place, becomes a mishkan, and becomes a mikdash for the light of Hashem. Once we understand this, al pizeh, we're in the second part of the sicha, al pizeh, through understanding this, yuban, we will understand, ma'ase yosef nafal al tzavorei kipshuto shel binyamin, why Yosef fell quite literally on the neck of Binyamin, Achiv, his brother, and he cried. And Binyamin in turn fell on his neck and he cried. It would seem. Why did they cry on each other's throats and not on each other's heads? Shehu ha'roish. Why did they cry in each other's heads, which is the highest point and the most important point of a person's body? They did this because, in truth, the main goal and the main reason for being of Bnei Yisrael is in accordance with what the Mishnah tells us in Kiddushin, that ani lo nivresi ela l'shamish eskeini. I was not created, each one of us was not created for, we were created for only one reason, to serve our creator. Hainu, l'shamish u'lahashlim es kavanas koine bivriyasoi uvriyas kol aylamis. We were created to serve and to bring to completion the intention of our creator in his creation of each one of us, and in the creation of all the worlds. And what is the point of that? This is the thing that runs like the main artery through all of the Rebbe's teachings, the Medrash and Tanchuma, Lias Loi Dira B'Tachtainim, that the world should be, and each one of us should be, a dwelling place for Hashem in this lower realm. V'zeh, and this Avodah, and this work, Taloi b'avodas b'nei Yisrael. This is dependent on our efforts, on our overtures. Shaharei, because we have a rule, the Gemara tells us, hakol b'idei shamayim chutz miyir shamayim, that everything is in the hands of heaven except for our fear of heaven. In other words, our spiritual overtures. Shehi reishis ha'avoda v'ikra v'sharsha. And yira shamayim, fear of heaven, is the beginning, and it is the focal point, and it is the root of all of our avodas Hashem. And all of our avodas Hashem is for the purpose, shehim yasu dir la'yizbar v'tatayim, that each one of us should create for Hashem a dwelling place in this lower realm. Al yedei shekol echad v'echad mehem yizachich es gufay v'nafshi ha'bahamas v'chelka ba'olam. And this is done through each one of us refining our body and our animalistic soul and the aspects of this world that are our chelek. So all the physical things that we own, all of our talents, all of our energies, everything that is our, that is ours, that is considered our chelek ba'olam, has to be refined. V'lachein ha'ikar b'zeh v'gam l'gabi b'chinas reish hu b'chinas ha'tzavar shabai. And that's, once we understand what it is that we're in this world to do, we understand that the most important thing actually ends up being the throat, as it were, rather than the head. Because it's through the agency of the neck or the throat, shal yaday nishlemas avayda zu kanal, because it's only through the funneling of the teachings that we understand with our intellect, through the agency of our throats, of our necks, to our heart and the rest of our bodies, that we can actually accomplish what we have to do in this world. So if everything stays up here, you know, it's great to be able to understand and to be filled with these ideas, but it doesn't lead to action. Once we understand this, it will be explained, Masha Yosef ben Yamin bachu ish al tzavari ochiv. Then we'll be able to understand why they cried on each other's necks, v'loy al harosh, and not on the head, because aleph al rosh shel ben Yisrael al nishmasay ein lifchais, because upon the head of a Jew, which is analogous to his neshama, to the highest aspect of him, there's nothing to cry over that. Because Nishmas Yisrael gam b'shas hachit haisa ba'amna ita yizbarach. Because the soul of a Jew, even when a soul, when the Jew sins, even at that moment, the soul is completely connected to and loyal to God. So there's nothing to cry over the head and bays. Tach lisa shel ben Yisrael eina bereshe. Bavaydasa shel haneshama la'atzma. The goal of a Jew is not the head. Again, in the analogy, it's not the avodah with the neshama for the neshama itself. Ela b'tzavarei. The whole reason we came into this world is not for the head, not for the neshama, but for the throat, for the neck. Lifoil beguf, that allows us through its agency to actually affect the body. The Nefesh HaBahamis, to affect the Nefesh HaBahamis, U'b'chelka ba'elam, and our aspect of this world that we need to affect, that only we can refine, that only we can elevate, that only we can transform. Okay, so once we understand why they fell on each other's necks rather than their heads, Rebbe says, Amnam tzarech lehavin. But now we have to understand something else. Lama bacha Yosef al hamikdashes b'chelko shel Binyamin. Why did Yosef cry on the temples, on the batei mikdash that were in the chelek, in the territory of Binyamin? Binyamin bacha la mishkan b'chelko shel Yosef, and Binyamin cried on the mishkan that was in the territory of Yosef. L'chayra, it would seem, adrab, on the contrary, kol echad mehem olav lifchais al chorban beis hamikdash b'chelko yihu. Each one of them should have been crying about the beis hamikdash that was in their chelek. Hare Adam Karev La'atzmai. We have a famous axiom, the Gemara tells us, that a person is close to themselves, that nobody feels your pain like you feel your pain. So why were they crying about each other's korbanos? Why weren't they crying on their own korban? And in parentheses, Rebbe says, Ba'at kedei kach. And so true is this axiomatic idea that we are close to ourselves, meaning that we can't feel anybody else. We can't really feel anybody else. We feel ourselves. Dafilu b'mitzvos Abba Yisrael. That even when it comes to the great mitzvah of Abba Yisrael, v'gam l'fi ha'mevor b'chassidus b'goydel echusa b'kamusos shel Abba Zu. And even according to what is explained in Chassidus about the greatness, both qualitatively and quantitatively, about the Ava that every Jew has to have to another Jew. Im kol zeh. Notwithstanding all of this, Hare Ava Eina Ela Ba'efen Shel V'Ahavta Re'acha Ka Meicha. Still and all, as great as this Ava is, it's only possible to love your fellow as you love yourself. B'chaf Hadimyon, with the Chaf, which is as yourself. And it can never really reach the extent, the mida, the increment with which you love yourself. And as Alter Rebbe brings in Tanya, in the same aspect of Tanya, in the same letter, where he explains at great length how much a person has to give tzedakah, which is the expression of chesed and ava. And in that same Igeres HaKadosh, he says, Asher b'shash she'ein b'yada ela kita in echad shel mayim, hinei chayecha kodmin. He brings down from the Gemara the famous ruling that two people who are traveling in the desert and they only have one flask of water. So there's a whole, in the Gemara, there's a whole back and forth. What should they do with this one flask? Should they divide it between the two of them? Or should the one who owns the flask drink it? And we paskin, according to Chayecha Kodmin, your life comes first. You drink it, even though it means that you will watch another person die. So if a person is always closer to themselves than they can be to anyone else, why were they crying about the destruction in each other's territories? So therefore, it's clear that surely each one is more concerned with the Beis Hamikdash that belongs to them in their territory. And it would seem, therefore, that the crying should be, first of all, on the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash that is in his own territory. And once we're talking about this, Aitzar Lahavin, the Rebbe says, is another question. In our parsha, a little bit further, in the next parak, when Yosef finally met Yaakov, in that moment of extreme pathos and drama, the Torah tells us, Vayipol Yosef al tzavarav shel Yaakov. Yosef fell on the neck of Yaakov, Vayivch al tzavarav oid. And he cried on his neck more, again. Rashi says profusely. Isa b'zohar. The Zohar teaches on this words, on this pasuk, she Yosef bocha al beis hamikdash shenecharav, that Yosef was crying on the bati mikdash that would be destroyed. U'bezem mitaris b'zohar mashakotza b'yevch al tzavar of oid. And with this, the Zohar is explaining the second time it says he cried more. She'az ha'yseb b'chia noisefes. That there was an additional crying, gam al golus basra'a, also on the latter exile, ala golus hachi acharin, on the final golus, on the golus that we are in now. V'yesh l'tmaya. So when we understand what the Zohar teaches, there's a big wonder. Madua rak Yosef bacha al korban beis hamikdash v'lo Yaakov. So how could it be that Yaakov wouldn't cry for the same reason? Why only Yosef engages in crying for all the Golias, including the Golias that we're in now. The Tirutza Shel Rashi, what does Rashi answer on why Yaakov wasn't crying? B'shein Rabbi Seinu, Rashi brings down in the name of our rabbis, She Yaakov HaYakire Es Shema, that the reason why Yaakov wasn't crying was because he was reading Shema. Now, according to Rashi, it's a Tirutz. It's an explanation that although this was a moment of such tremendous emotion, Yaakov was able to overcome this great emotion and engage in saying this first pasuk of Kriya Shema properly with so much kavana, and he marshaled all of his strengths to overcome what he must have been feeling. But if you go according to what the Zayar explains about why Yosef is crying, it would seem that this is not an explanation that he was saying Shema. If you understand it according to Pshat, if you understand that this was just basically Yosef was crying because of the tremendous emotion of seeing his father. It wasn't about the Chorban. And so Yaakov didn't cry, and he didn't kiss Yosef at that moment because he was saying Shema. So what is being underscored here is the greatness of Yaakov and the greatness of his Avodas Hashem. Gam be'esha ra'ez b'nai b'pam harishayna la'achrei sh'rabayz b'shanim chashav ki enenu b'chayim. Even after seeing his son for the first time, after so many years that he thought that he was not alive, b'chalzayz, even so, la'hifsik mikriyasay eshema. He did not stop, he didn't pause in saying Shema properly. V'ayd yeser, and even more. Simcha atzuma zu. This great happiness that washed over him, loy hitridasay milchabim bekriyas pasuk rishon tishma shatricha kavana, did not disturb him from properly concentrating on saying this first pasuk of Shema Yisrael that necessitates very specific kavana. Aval lefi perish hazayhar, but according to what the Zayar tells us. How is it possible? Sheyakov Avinu loy nisragesh v'loy nitrat. He did not become emotional. He was not emotionally aroused, and he was not perturbed. Al yidei churban beis hamikdash, by the destruction of the beis hamikdash. V'haya yachal b'shah zu likrei shema b'kavana. How is it possible that he was able to read the Shema with kavana and not be overcome with angst and be distraught about the destruction of the Batei Mikdash and the long golos that we are found in currently? Dalit. We're in the fourth part of the Sicha. Ubir Hadavar. And now the Rebbe says the explanation. The explanation for why Yosef cried on Binyamin and Binyamin cried on Yosef. And why Yosef cried on Yaakov, but Yaakov did not in like fashion cry on Yosef, is explained in the following manner. And there's such great poignancy and such great, if I'm allowed to say this, beauty in what the Rebbe is going to say here. Inin habachia kipshutai binyanei ha'olam. In general, when you understand the notion of crying, generally speaking, hu bechdei lahakel al habaicha, it is to lighten or to ameliorate the pain of the one who is crying. And as we see, practically speaking, that when a person cries for something that pains and burdens him, it's not really possible for the crying itself to fix the cause of the pain, the cause of the crying. Ella, but a person cries, v'yirvachlai, and he feels a kind of expansiveness or a release. V'alderech mashekasuv ha'isali dimasi lechem. David HaMelech in Tehillim says, my crying, we know that David HaMelech went through an enormous amount of travail in his life, tremendous amount of angst and troubles. And he, so much so, he said that my crying was like my bread. It satiated me. There is a feeling of release. There is a feeling of something happens when you cry. It makes you feel better. David HaMelech says it satiated me. Mizem move on. But from this is understood that as much as crying can make a person feel a sense of release and can help them feel better. On the other hand, kishayesh b'yado l'taken ha'inyan, but when a person has the ability to fix something, harei adra, but then on the contrary, ein makam lahagia ruchei b'fchia, then it's not appropriate for him to calm himself through crying. Elatzarech hu l'aseis l'taken. He has to actually do something. He has to fix something. V'lachei. And therefore, kisharaya churban mikdashay shel chaverei, when a Jew sees that his friend's Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, as it were, microcosmically, then mishtatei b'tzarei b'eche, then it's appropriate that he should empathize in the pain and he should cry. Aval ikar hatikun ubinyan Beis HaMikdash mechadash eina talibay ela b'chaverei. But the work of fixing and building, rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, the small temple, the small mikdash is found in each one of us, to rebuild it again, it's not something you can do for your friend. It doesn't depend on you. It depends on your friend. Each one of us has to build our own Beis HaMikdash. Now, what do we have to do for our friends? Hu yachol, we can, u'mechuyib, and we are obligated, la'azor l'chaverei, to help our friend. Aleph, number one, alidei sheyachichu b'darchei noyam. First thing is, one way we can help another person is by reprimanding them, of course, in a very, very kind way, in a refined way, in a pleasant way. And beis, alidei sheyar racham mispalel alav, and simply speaking, to turn to Hashem for mercy and to pray for the other person. Aval habitul bipoyel shel hachatayim. But practically speaking, the negation of the sins, shegormu, shenishtalcha yad b'mikdash chaveri, that caused that a hand, as it were, should be sent against the mikdash of his friend, meaning the sins that precipitated, that made possible the destruction of the temple within the friend, tali b'chaver, shehu bal b'chira. This depends only on each person by themselves. This depends on your friend. And your friend is a bal b'chira. Every person has choice. Every person has their own volition. So it's not something you can superimpose upon them. You can't build their Beis HaMikdash. Only they can. U'b'shah she'asas kol ma she'b'koyche la'azor l'chaver. And then, and only after you did everything you could to help your friend, and after all of your overtures in the direction of helping your friend, Raya, you see shemitish chaver charav edeno, that it's still destroyed. Then it bothers you so much that you start to cry. So it's not that you're unmoved by the plight of your friend. Because it's your friend, and you can't build it, you try to do everything that you can. And then if that's not helpful, then you cry for the pain. But when a person contemplates, looks, perceives their own Beis HaMikdash, their personal Beis HaMikdash within themselves, then it's not appropriate for us to satisfy ourselves with sighing and with crying. No, then we have to put all of our efforts and we have to try with all of our might to build, to fix, and to build once again anew the Beis HaMikdash. Through working spiritually to bring our personal redemption about. Now the Rebbe gives one caveat: when is crying for our own Beis HaMikdash okay? Levad b'imabchia hi dimoy shel tshuva. The only kinds of tears that are appropriate when it comes to our own Beis HaMikdash are tears of tshuva. She'az ha'bechia atzma hi tikun. Because then the crying itself is a form of fixing. The initial binyan, and it's a form of building our Beis HaMikdash. U'kamei she'nemar. And just like David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Sima demasi b'noyadecha. Place my tears in your bucket, as it were. David HaMelech says, place my tears before you, my tears of tshuva. Uluf amim. But there are times, habechia machalisha avadasa bevinah hamikdash shalai. There are times where tears can weaken your resolve to work on your own Beis HaMikdash. Ba'amrei, when we say to ourselves, ba'amrei b'libai, when we say in our heart, ki kvar yatsa yedei chavasa b'fchia, when a person says, I've already done everything I have to do, I've already basically, you know, fulfilled my obligation. You see how hard I was crying? So the Rebbe says, no, that's not okay. And therefore, Yosef and Binyamin each cried for the Beis HaMikdash that was destroyed in the territory of their brother, of the other. And what about, why did Yaakov not cry? If we go according to what the Zohar said, that Yosef was crying about the Churbanos of the Beis HaMikdash, the Bati Mikdash, and the Golos, how was Yaakov unmoved? The Rebbe says he didn't cry. Kim haya kaya shema. Now we understand. He was saying shema. Ki Yaakov hu avim shel kol b'nei Yisrael. Because Yaakov is the father of all b'nei Yisrael. V'lechein hein ha-mishkan v'hein ha-beis ha-migdash hein b'chalkai. And so therefore, all the pain and all the destruction that is found in any part of his son's territory, both the Mishkan and the Mikdash, and all the tsaris of the long Golos, and even this Golos Achrin, it's all in his territory, as it were, because he's the father. So Yaakov could not afford, as it were, the luxury of crying. He had to say Shema. Now the Rebbe explains what is affected through Shema. How is this a tikkun of binyan Beis HaMikdash? How is this a rectification in the building of the Beis HaMikdash? Shehari inyan Beis HaMikdash hu sheyia bayis muchan lekarbonis. Because the Rambam explains that the central aspect of the Beis HaMikdash is the fact that karbonis could be offered there. And the Gemara teaches v'chola kare kriya shema, that every person that says shema harezu k'ilu hikriv oila v'zeva chule, it's as if he brought up korbanos oila and zvachim ki ikar inen hakorban hu, because after all, what is the main purpose of bringing a korban? Like the Torah says, the pasuk in Vayikra says, adam ki yakriv mikem korban lahashem, a person from amongst you who will bring a korban. And Chassidus explains that it should have said Adam Michem ki yakriv, a person from among you when he brings a korban. But it says a person when a person brings a korban Michem, from amongst you. That the most important aspect of a korban is bringing yourself closer to Hashem, and that is the inyan of Kriya Shema u'mesiras nefesh sheba. And it says that when a yid says Kriya Shema, he has to be mechaven. You have to have the intention that you'd be ready to give up your life for Hashem, limsor nafshe be'echa, b'chol nafshecha, afilu noitel es nafshecha, to give up your life for the unity of Hashem. When you say b'chol nafshecha, it means even at the cost of giving up your life. So Yaakov couldn't cry. He was engaged in what needed to be done at that moment, which was to build the Beis HaMikdash. Ve'ein lahakshayis nadachem says, and there's no room for the following question. You might ask the following question, which is, Kivan shero b'ruach ha-kadosh ha-mishkan ha-mikdash ha-sidin l'charev, because they saw the ruach ha-kadosh Yosef and Binyamin, they saw that both the Mishkan and then later the Bati Mikdash were going to be destroyed. So they could have said, Hare kvar nigzar alzal mimayla. This was already decreed from above. Uma efshe laseis b'zeh. So what are they crying about? There's nothing to do. If it was already decreed from above that the Bati Mikdash, that the Mishkan are going to be destroyed, so what's there to do? There's nothing to cry about, and there's also nothing to do practically. But the Rebbe says, no. Da'alekfar amru chazal. Because our chazal told us, Gemara Brachos, afilu cheref chada munachas al tzavar shel adam, that even when a very sharp sword is lying flush with your neck, with your throat, you're about to be killed. Al yimna atzmai min harachamim. A person should not hold back from asking from Hashem for rachamim, for mercy. Va'afil acha gzar din. Even after it's decreed, efshar al yidei avoida lekarei. It is possible through our beseeching, through our avoida, to tear asunder a gezerah memaila. And the Rebbe brings an example. For the matzino b'chizkiyah, like we found with Chizkiyah, sheishayahu masar loy hanivuah. Shayahu anavi came to Chizkiyah melech, and he told him, in a nevuah, he told him, shenigzal Chizkiyah sheyamos, that it was decreed above that he's going to die immediately. Forthwith, amar loy Chizkiyah leshayahu, and Chizkiyah said to Yeshayahu, kalei nevuascha v'tzei, stop with your nevuah and leave. Leave my presence. Vayasev ponav elakir, and Chizkiyah turned his face to the wall, v'yispalel Hashem, and he prayed to Hashem. Utfilasa ha'ila. And the Rebbe says, and his davening was efficacious, it helped. Like it says, shamati es tfilascha, I heard your prayer. And ha'yisifu loy chamesha sreshana al shnois chayav. And 15 years were added to his life. Chamesha sreshnois chayim kipshutam. 15 actual years, gam ba'olam hazeh, in this physical world, not just 15 years beruchnias. So we should never accept status quo, because there's always the possibility to push back through our avoda, through our tefillah. But we cannot satisfy ourselves with sighing and with crying. We have to turn those tears into action. V'amru Chazal, and Chazal taught us, kol dor she'ena nivna beis hamikdash b'yamav malin olav ki'iluhu hechrivai, that every generation in which the beis hamikdash is not rebuilt, it is as if it was destroyed. It's as if that generation destroyed it almost. And in like fashion, we can apply this to each one of us and each one of our personal Batei Mikdash. Why is the larger Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, not being rebuilt in our day? It's because our personal Beis HaMikdash is in a state of destruction. If our spiritual service, our personal spiritual service, and our personal Beis HaMikdash was completely extant, it was completely in existence, the Mashiach would come and he would rebuild the general Beis HaMikdash. And contemplating this and meditating and ruminating upon this, kavanasa v'tachlisa, the intention and the goal of this, the Rebbe says, I'm not telling you these words to make you sigh and cry. The kavana, the intention and the tachlis and the goal of this, loy ha'nacha v'hapchia, it's not to sigh and to cry. Ki im ha'pe'ula v'ha'asiya, it's to do something. It's to effect hagu'ula ha'pratis, to effect each one of us, our personal redemption, u'binyan beis hamikdash b'nafshai, and the rebuilding of the beis hamikdash in our own souls. Va'al yidei zeh, and through this, yimaher v'yam shichas hagu'ula ha'klolis, and through this, we will hasten, and we will bring about the general redemption that we are waiting for, u'binyan beis hamikdash b'mkaymai, and the rebuilding of the beis hamikdash in its proper place, al yedei Mashiach tzedkenu b'kar of mamash, through Mashiach tzedkenu, and may it be speedily. And of course, I don't remember this. It happened a little bit before I was born, 1964, just a smidgen. But those that were there have told us that the Rebbe cried during the sicha. And I want to just read to you two lines from a mimer, again, a very famous mimer, Leisia Mishakela, that was said a few months after the Rebbe took on the Nesias. And when the Rebbe said the following words, he cried so hard that he had to put his head down on the table. He couldn't speak for a few moments. And he said the following, Ki biyadai, when a person knows, shebechol rega verega tzarech lemalei eshlichusai, that at every moment he must fulfill his mission in life. Vim oiver rega she'ena oivid avadasai. And if one moment passes in which he does not fulfill his mission, harizi lai rak shahay yachalis alis l'shak sheik avadasai, it's not only that he missed out the opportunity to advance and flourish in his avadas Hashem, he did not do that. But it's more. Sheberega ze, in this moment, she'ena oved avodasai, that he doesn't do his spiritual work, mayritu b'melech malchei hamlochim hakadosh baruch hu. He is actually rebelling against the King, King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be he. When you see a recurring theme here, the Rab is urging us to use every moment in time that Hashem has given us. To Poshet Kipshute, use every moment. And we have a lot of reasons now to cry and to sigh. It's not an easy time for anybody now. And there were many times where it wasn't easy for people. And for sure, the Rebbe lived through so many difficulties, saw so much tragedy during his lifetime. But his focus and what he urged us to do in like fashion was to use every moment, to seize every opportunity. You know, in America, we're very used to talking about like killing time. But like the Rebbe taught us that it's not a joke, that every moment in time has an neshama, it has potential. And when you don't use it, you are mamish killing it. And we can't do that. We can't afford to do that. And the Rebbe says in that Maimer Loisia Meshakela, it's like you're being married by Malchus. You're rebelling against Hashem. It's not just that you're not advancing in your own personal Aveda. Oh, and it's a shame because you could have done more with your time and you didn't. No, you're being married by Malchus. You're rebelling against Hashem because Hashem gave you those moments, those minutes, those hours, those weeks, those months, those years. So Hashem should help that we should be able to feel the urgency and heed this tremendous lesson, and not at the risk of not having time for somebody else's pain. And that's also such an important thing that the Rebbe taught us. You know, we just came from Hanukkah, and it was a few months after the Rebbe suffered that very, very serious heart attack on Simchas Torah. So a few months after that, it was only a few months, it was Hanukkah. And the Rebbe said that he wanted to give out Hanukkah gilt. And that year, this was the only time that the Rebbe gave out something. He said he wanted to do it mipesach beisa mibachutz, just like you're supposed to light Hanukkah candles at the door of your house. So he wanted to do it by the door going into 770, the men's shul. Like, I think now there's a ramp there. Then it was like the main entrance. Rebbe stood there. It was winter, and as much as people were coming in, there was a draft. But besides that, it was a few months after the Rebbe had a terrible heart attack. And so the maskirim, the Rebbe's secretariat, they tried to tell people not to go over, not to take the Rebbe's time. You know, not to take Hanukkah gel from the Rebbe, just the Rebbe should be able to finish more quickly and go back into his room. And the Rebbe got so upset when he saw that he sent the maskirim away. He sent the maskirim away, and he said he wanted to give to everybody, every man, every woman, every child. There were many, many, many nisim, many, many wondrous things that happened. Then my own brother had a problem with a tear duct, and he was supposed to be operated on that. And my mother took him in her hands to get a dollar, and the Rebbe waved the dollar back and forth for my brother to look at the dollar. He was a little baby, follow the motion of the dollar. And the next time when my mother took my brother back to the doctor to see him right before the surgery, he said the issue had resolved itself. But anyway, that's another thing. But I think that at the same time that the Rebbe was saying, you can't like wallow in self-pity and pain for yourself because you have too much work to do We have to get this done. At the same time, when it comes to somebody else's pain, yeah, Yosef should cry on Binyamin's shoulder, and Binyamin should cry on Yosef's shoulder for somebody else's destruction, for somebody else's pain, for somebody else's travail. Yes, it's appropriate to cry. And it's not just for their ruchnistic destruction, as it were, that we have to cry. You know, like we're taught that that a small flaw, begashmias, is a big flaw, beruchnias, for another yid's pain, begashmias. We have to cry. For that, we have time. And for that, it's appropriate. And but for ourselves, we have too much to do. I know that it's 11 o'clock, but if for those that can stay on for another few minutes, is a beautiful, I just want to bring to everybody's attention that Sichas in English has just published the second book in an amazing series of Likutei Sichas, where they compile three sichas on every parsha from different chalakim. And on Parshas Vayigash, one of the sichas that are translated into English is this sicha that we just learned. And in the introduction is the following story, really beautiful story, that one time the famed mashpia, Rabbi Cheskel Fagin, otherwise known as Rabbi Chachka Fagin, was holding a fabringen. It was in communist Russia. It was in a cellar. And obviously it was a dangerous thing to do. So they had two bachrim were stationed on the lookout for any authorities that would come, and they would let people know that they had to break up the fabringen. So Pachka was fabringing, and he made demands of himself, and he made demands of the bachrim, and they took him very seriously, and some of them were even moved to tears. And suddenly, one of the bachrim that was on the lookout ran down, and he said that a suspicious group of men is approaching this location. And it's possible that they were KGB agents. So immediately, all the Bachrim began figuring out what they should do. And they had different opinions. Some of them thought that they should all run away. Others argued that this would make it even more suspicious. Some of them said that they should just sit there, but they should take out other books or newspapers. They should make like they were looking at magazines and political science books and pretend. And others thought that the authorities would see right through that ruse. And they suggested that they should hide in the building. So, you know, the story, you have, you know, two Jews and three opinions, and they're all vociferously arguing their position on what should be done. And it became so heated, and that in the interim, another bacher came down to say that the group of men left this neighborhood. They didn't have to worry anymore. So now they sat down again, and their mashpia, Reb Chachka, looked at them, and he says, you know, the way you behaved really makes me question something. So they looked at him like, what are you going to say? And their mashpia said to the bachrim, he says, so tell me, what's more important to you, gashmias or ruchnias? So the bachrim were in a gashmias. He said, so it's an interesting thing, because when I was talking to you about ruchnias, you started to cry. But when you were contemplating your physical danger, I didn't see any tears. So they looked at him and they said, yeah, because we had to do something. So he said, oh, now I understand. About the gashmis, you had to do something. But about the ruchnis, you cried. So it's a really important story, and such a great story to act as a preface, as it does in that sefer, to this sicha that we just learned. So, yeah, we have to do something. That's the bottom line. So I wish everybody a wonderful week, and may we all get done what we have to do, and may there be a refuah shleima for everybody that needs it, and we should all be whole. Everything should be whole, begashmias or beruchnias, and we should just finish up this project already. Kol tov, everybody.
Thank you so much.